Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge. Blazing leader in global business operations, currently serving as the CEO of Decathlon Americas, where she oversees operations across Canada, the United States, Mexico, Brazil, Chile, and Colombia. With over 15 years of experience in e-commerce, retail, financial services, and consulting, Adriana has held pivotal leadership roles at Meta, PayPal, and McKinsey & Company. Her focus on innovation, team empowerment, and business growth has been the cornerstone of her success in diverse markets. Adriana's passion for building high-performing teams shines through her work with organizations like Latinas in Tech and Reinserta, demonstrating her commitment to social impact and employee engagement. Today, we'll delve into Adriana's leadership insights, her approach to managing complexity while ensuring teammates' well-being and remaining human-centric. Welcome, Adriana.
Thank you so much, Heather. Very excited to be here.
Excellent. So, Adriana, we have confirmed yesterday in our prep call and just in this moment that you're human. So we'd like to start our podcast with asking you a Proust questionnaire question. So Marcel Proust used these questions because he felt the answers to these questions really give us insight into who you are as a person. So our question for you is, what is your most treasured possession, Adriana?
That's a very hard one because I actually don't think that I do from an object perspective. And that speaks a lot about myself. To give you an idea, my wife and I have multiple wedding rings because we know we lose them. So when we had the jeweler make it, we're like, can you make just two or three versions of this? Because I just know it's hard for me to be attached to things. I will say, and not because I work at Decathlon, but not because of the thing itself, but a lot of the sports equipment that I own, given the experiences that it takes me to. And I love hiking with my kids, skiing, biking, anything that we do. So it's the means to the experience with the family that actually makes a difference for me.
That's a brilliant answer because, as you said, right, it's not the object, it's the experience, it's what that evokes or makes you do that really does give us a lot of insight into who you are. What are the most prominent challenges, do you think, Adriana, CEOs will face in leading companies through AI-driven change?
So I think it's a very challenging time, right? So one of the things that we've always understood is we're living in complex environments, in fast-pacing environments, but the complexity and the fast-pacing have just magnified in a way that we've never seen before, right? And so I think as leaders, as we're grappling with some of these changes to everything that we knew as certain is now uncertain, and everything that we knew possible or not possible is extremely possible. And so as we go through these challenges, I think for us is, and I'll land it into something more concretely, but when we think about what are the challenges for the industry in which you're operating and then the communities that you're serving, and how do we tie that in different ways?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to talk a little bit about leadership and leading through this complexity in a few moments. But we know and we've learned that you have a mantra at Decathlon of power yourself and power your team. So what does it mean to power yourself?
Yeah, so I think, and it's related to AI, right? And so, it's related to many things, but I'll answer the question specifically related to AI and the technology shifts that we're facing, right? So we're facing a pace of disruption never seen before. It's not that we can accelerate processes 2x. It's we're talking about 10x and maybe tomorrow 100x. And so that actually means we need to reimagine many things in how they're operating. From a personal perspective, from the tactical pieces, hey, are particularly people like us, we work in a distribution business and in a product development business. Like we're vertically integrated. So we have products in market. We create very good products and then we distribute them in 60 countries. When you're in a distribution and a product company, it's not that we can digitalize everything, right? But we are filled with significant amount of tasks and things to do that might be necessary, but not necessarily value added. So when we think about AI and from a personal productivity perspective, is how do we get more time to spend time on the things that actually matter? Strategizing, asking the right questions, spending more time with customers, understanding the market in better and different ways. And from a teams in a people perspective and a team and a process perspective, is now it's not just saying, hey, I'm going to make this process faster. Is do I actually even need this process? Mm-hmm. Do it reimagine? Because this process was created in an era where we could move at X amount of speed. But when think about product development process, could we parallel path some of the things that we used to think like stage gate, they're sequential, you have your KPIs. Do we even reimagine those processes to go faster to market? And so it's powering ourselves, powering our teams to better serve our customer and our client needs.
So what I really appreciate about that answer is the possibility and the optimism for each individual, regardless of role or where you are in the organization, is it allows you to question. I love that, right? Do we even, why are we doing it this way? Do we even need to do it this way? So it gives you the opportunity to question this disruption, right? Because sometimes we just kind of plod along because we've done it this way, where we make small incremental changes. And now we can just pause and say, okay, let's reimagine this. That's the first thing that I hear you say. And the other thing is spending more time on things that will add value to your customers, add value to your teammates, add value to the organization. And because, and we'll get to this in a moment too, because you're such a mission-driven organization, right? How can we add more value to the mission now that I, you know, have automated some things, right, in my role?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's amazing. So that comes to this, my mission question or mission-related question is your family-owned organization, your for-profit company, but fundamentally mission driven. And I heard you say that a few times yesterday. So clearly that is part of the DNA, so to speak, of your organization. And the part of that mission is making sports accessible to the many. So how does that mission also transfer to your workforce and how you work with teammates, meaning the approach your organization really takes to teammates and associates?
Yeah, let me take a step back to explain a little bit what who we are and why this is important, right? So we were born in the north of France, and Decathlon is born from our founders' just extreme understanding of the value of sports and then the lack of market or product offerings for everyone to be able to access the sports. And we started with the bicycles, but now today we are 60 sports under one roof. We're vertically integrated. We're in more than 60 countries. So we're the biggest sports retailer in the world. And so when you think about how we've been able to do that in such a little amount of time and how we actually serve the market, it's a beautiful process that in my experience, I came from process-based companies, not necessarily value-based companies. And we don't have jobs at Decathlon because we're so mission-driven and it's making sports accessible to all. And we've added a layer to our mission where we say we need to move people through the wonders of sports. And the only difference and distinction between those two is because when we started with like the first entry-level products. For you to start the sport. But as we've evolved as a company, now we have a product from everyone from beginner to expert. And so we want to make sure that it is clear that no matter your sports expertise, we have a product that can meet your needs and make you fly bigger. And even there, and I'm going to make a little bit of detour and I promise I'm going to go back. We created this amazing bike and the brand of Van Riesel. So we have multiple brands that we've created. And the Van Riesel team first said, okay, I just want to make sure we have the best and fastest bike in the market. And our team worked with the equivalent of the French NASA to develop this bike. And then this bike, we are sponsors of Age de Serre, which is one of the Pro Tour teams in the cycling road in Europe. And the team went from being one of the last in the list to being at the top of the list. And when we interviewed one of the team members, we're like, okay, what changed? Like, is it, and that captures the beauty of what we do with Decathlon. What he said was, hey, the bike is faster. Like, it's significantly faster. So when we were riding that bike as a team, we started to move faster. But then once you start moving faster, it gives you the confidence, and that's into the performance. And the Agile des Sports is not an individual star team. It's a collective. It's the power of the collective, which is our mission. And so what we've done from an organizational perspective is, how do we make sure that every person that works, every one of our teammates is aligned to that mission and that power? What we do as we move communities through the wonders of sport matters, and it matters to a lot of people. And so at Decathlon, we don't have jobs. We have a mission. You don't manage people. You animate them. And you animate them because we have other principles in our management scheme where we say trust a priori. And if you think about what we're going through in this world of complexity, how much power there is in embedding trust in an individual for you to be able to perform what you don't even know it's possible. That Agile des Sports team did not know what they could do. And then it became possible. We believe in that principle, and we believe in the autonomy that you should have to fulfill that goal. And so when you manage someone, you're actually more or less telling them what to do. There's a process established, you need to follow it. But when you animate, you're there to be a mirror, to reflect on the strengths and the skills that the person has, and to remind them of how much is actually possible. And through the belief in another one of our values is responsibility. Our teammates are so responsible. Like, you needed to ask for results. Like, people are just deeply committed to delivering, not because of the financial number, but because they know that if we reach whatever goal we have, we're actually serving more of our customers and moving more people through the wonders of sports.
Amazing. You know, I was as I was listening to you speak about this and illustrating it, I got the sense in many organizations, right? We call people managers or leaders. I mean, there's a component of either. And then we add on sort of coaching to performance. And I feel like that is flipped at Decathlon in the sense of your leaders and managers are really there about coaching performance. And also, because when I've done training sessions, there's a big difference between coaching, mentoring, and managing. Because coaching really is about drawing out the strengths of that individual and saying to that individual, I always use the example of running, right? How fast do you want to run that 100 meters? And so, you know, some of the best runners in the world, it's not the coach saying you need to run that under 10 seconds. It's the athlete saying, I want to run that in 9.85 or whatever the current right is, or marathons under 2 hours. And so then the coach helps you get there, right? And so that's the sentiment that I feel is when you say you animate and you know your leaders are not there to manage. I mean, there's an element, of course, people will have, you know, goals and SMART goals and so on, but really the philosophy is about how do you increase the performance of each of your teammates? Is that a fair?
Yeah, and in your analogy of the runner, in traditional organizations, it is the coach that tells them what has to be achieved and when. In our organization, and taking the philosophy of sports, is like, you determine what's possible, and I will make you, like, I will help. Like, you first need to understand that it is possible. We put people in roles we know they're not ready for. And we do that on purpose because we trust that the person can grow into the role and through the ambition and the responsibility that you can actually get to something you didn't even imagine possible. When you look at a basketball coach, like, they're not telling what is the right exact play. Like, the wonders and the beauty of the sport is that as there's some strategy, then you also add the individual creativity and value add, and that's what makes a team great.
Yeah, I think that's so neat how and hence thank you for explaining that in depth because it really helps me to understand the link, the mission-driven link, right? So it's not just a statement, it's not just a phrase. It is deeply woven into not only how you interact with your customers, but frankly, how every person interacts with their teammates.
Yeah. And that's the only way. I mean, there's many ways to scale organization, but this is a beautiful way to scale an organization because none of us will be there in the interaction with the customer at the end of the day. In every single interaction, we touch the lives of millions of customers every day. Right. How do we make sure that we ensure that consistency in that commitment to just make sure that we make their lives better through sport?
Absolutely. And in any, I think, customer-facing role, I will only provide good service if I will only empower and provide good service and be animating, you know, animate the customer if I myself am animated, right? So if my leader is not doing that for me, it's pretty hard to then, right, expect that there's always, I've always found this really weird disconnect when I've worked with organizations where leaders, are leading in a certain way, but then saying, but you need to provide, you know, the ultimate best customer service. And when there's not that alignment between the inner and the outer, then it's not as effective, right?
And when we connect it back to the AI piece is, mm-hmm. how do I give you information in the right time to magnify that power? Mm-hmm. Because you mm-hmm. cannot know everything about that software, but we can help you better understand what's happening in everything that you're not seeing in the purview of the perimeter that you're operating.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So let's talk about leaders. So their role is to animate, their role is to coach. Do you see additional competencies as we move into the future or this complex environment that we're frankly in now? Do you see additional competencies or behaviors that leaders will need to develop or really keep in mind in order to continue to be able to coach to success?
Absolutely. And I think this transformation started before, but it's even more so now. And I'll make the relationship with AI and prompting. But before, when people looked up to a leader, they were looking up for the answers. Mm-hmm. Like, what made up a good leader is competence. And within that competence meant having the right answers to the problems. And I see our roles as leaders on problem identifiers, not necessarily problem solvers. That's where the team comes in, but asking the right questions. Like, if you think about the solution today with AI and prompt, like the moment you put a prompt, depending on the complexity of your prompt, it can take between 3 seconds and maybe 1 hour, right? But you will get the answer. The answer is not the most important piece. Is, are you asking the right question? Are you actually thinking of the problem in the right way? Are there things that you're not considering? And the same for people, right? I think more than ever, so we have a piece of critical analytical thinking and a piece of intentionality in the things that we do. And then from a people management perspective is, how do you make sure you're giving people a sense of belonging, a sense of understanding of their role, their impact, and also empowering them to do whatever is not possible? And then how do you do that as the collective and as a team? And I think that's where we need to put on acceleration these empowerment techniques versus managing, right? And the word managing now, even like for me, resonates is like, you're going, there's friction in the word management. Like,
yeah.
You need to manage, right? And now, like, we actually just need to make sure that it can flow more easily and we can harness the power of human potential in ways that we didn't know before.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yes, managing that word, to your point, sort of puts a box around things or some kind of, right, some boundaries, or that's the image it provides. And I really appreciated your talk or what you said about knowledge, because you're absolutely right. When I used to do my generational work, where you said, you know, the older generations viewed knowledge as power. Right. So and we were raised to sort of believe, yes, the most senior person should have the most knowledge. But the younger generations don't see knowledge as power. It's what you can do with the knowledge.
Exactly.
That gives you power. Right. And so that's sometimes where there's also a bit of a friction point, because if older generations have, you know, sometimes will want to hold on because that's what they believe where their value lies in having the knowledge. And now we're moving into an era where we are. But what can you do with that knowledge? And then the other piece, as we've heard from quite a few leaders in various regards, is the opportunity for both leaders and I would say teammates to understand to be able to adjudicate whatever, let's say, gets spit out from the AI, right? I mean, some words, some people even use the words, is it right, is it correct, or did AI just hallucinate something, right? Mm-hmm. That it's not, you know, as we said about the internet, not just to buy everything that is sort of produced, but yeah. to have that critical analysis skill to be able to adjudicate, is this what I'm looking for and how do I best use this?
Yeah, and I think more, I mean, as AI progresses, we're going to have more accuracy in the responses. So I think right now it's a maturity stage where we're asking, hey, do I even rely on the information? Mm-hmm. But I think more and more it's going to get into the execution piece. As I said, like no matter how much AI we have, I still need to move a product from China, Vietnam, or wherever it's produced and put it on the shelf, right?
Right. Yeah, it's very
put it on the shelf or deliver it to my customer's house, right? But it is a real world problem, right? And so how do we use and harness the technology to make sure that we're faster and better as we do that? But it's more the work itself is not gonna, some of those things are not gonna disappear. You still need to get milk on people's fridges every week.
Yeah, 100%, the tangible pieces, yeah. So how, I think we've kind of been skirting a little bit around this in the sense or talking around it, but how do you define well-being? At Decathlon,
I think for me it's a combination of doing work that's purposeful, and I think more and more in a world with a lot of noise, when you even ask the new generations, like they're more interested about having purpose and meaning and impact than they are about like traditional things that we've considered on career, right? So
right.
When you have purpose, when you believe in what you're doing, it has a positive effect on how you view the things and it helps you reframe, right? And I think one of the most powerful tools in coaching is reframing, right? Mm-hmm. How do we make sure that whatever you're doing in your daily mission or job in another company can be seen as something that is actually enhancing you as a person and as a professional and you're growing? I think for us, well-being also means that you're challenged with yourself, but that you're kind to yourself as you do that and you give grace to yourself. Because sometimes coming from an athlete culture and sports culture, it's we're going, we're ambitious, we play to win in the element of grace and kindness through the way we do that. Our former chairman had a beautiful phrase that I always love is, in times of hardship, you're kind. In times when things are going well, you're very demanding, right? Right. And it gives you that balance on how we approach problems, because we're not here to turn a quarter. We're here to make sure we're in the long term serving the communities that we have a purpose to serve.
Oh, amazing. So I'm going to repeat that to make sure that it's seared in my brain. In times of hardship, you're kind. And in times of success, you are demanding.
Exactly.
Amazing. And so then how do leaders help to support, maintain, first of all, their own well-being, right? But also their teammates. What some practical advice from you on what can leaders do or should they do?
I think I had in a former role, a phrase that one of my leaders used a lot, and I always repeat it because the visual of it is very important, is when the oxygen masks comes in the airplane, the instruction is always put it on yourself first. Mm-hmm. And when we think about leaders, we oftentimes think we care so much about people, like we forget about ourselves. And so making sure that we start with ourselves and that we can have a balanced view. And then for the teams, I think usually people will talk about the enabling mechanisms in which we can make sure that there's balance and that people have fulfillment in what they do. But I also think there's some practical things, like how do we help teams ruthlessly prioritize? How do we understand the impact that we have as leaders when we randomly come up with ideas? There's teams that actually are going to chase that idea, right?
Right.
And so one of the things that I always keep in mind as in talking to people is the impact of my words and how they can be translated in things that I might not necessarily be one thing for someone to start something new, but it can get translated as that, right? So how do we make sure we keep very clear, speaking of the first part, on What are the industry forces? What is your strategy? How do you define your strategy? What are the levers for your strategy? And making sure that you have ruthless prioritization to that and that everyone is aligned on what we're trying to achieve and how are we making progress. And so I think the practical piece of what we would call traditionally management, but that visibility and that understanding and that ability to say no. Because with AI, if anything, you have more possibility, right? So getting your stick on the ground and going for something and understanding that that means not going for something else will also help in that well-being, because otherwise organizations will be overwhelmed.
Yeah, and not only organizations, but teams, right? So I love the phrase you ruthlessly prioritizing, because it's true. As leaders, sometimes we will say, oh, wouldn't it be neat if we do this in a team meeting, or maybe we should think of that. And to your point, if you were then to ask the six people in the room, there will probably be six different answers as to what came out of that meeting, right, as well. And two people will say, well, Adriana said we should go after X. Two people will say, no, she was just musing, right? She was just throwing out ideas. And two people will be in the middle and confused, right? And so being really clear about that visibility and being really strict, I think does lead to well-being, because it alleviates that disconcerted or discombobulated. Like, did she tell us to go A or B or where, right? Exactly. What direction are we going?
Exactly. We're learning from an amazing organization in Colombia that is using AI. And one of the first things they did was call it a ChatGPT internally to ask questions and get. So before, like if a sales leader was like, hey, and some organizations are more digital than others, right? So understanding that you might not have dashboarding and all these things is like, hey, what was the sales performance of X client? Mm-hmm. It would mean a chain of work that goes down and say like, oh, the account director goes to the account manager, pull the information, create the report. They put a chat version and you can ask the chat and you'll have your answers immediately, right? So but that is not only an example of AI, how Granny can solve it, but also how we're not aware of how much work some of the things that we're wondering and we're asking our organization actually create. And maybe I'm mindful of that.
Yes. To get this one answer that you were just kind of curious about, meanwhile, three people have just spent 2 hours getting you that answer. Yes. Exactly. Yeah, no, that's great. So we're nearing towards the end of our podcast, and I want to ask you another for some more practical advice. We want to end this part of the conversation with asking you, what is one website, book, article, or learning a leader can access today to continue on their leadership journey?
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of self-awareness and understanding of your strengths and strength building. And so some people might be familiar with this or not. There's a book called The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks, and it speaks about, so I think it gives a good framework for thinking about your strengths and your things. And there's four areas in which you can operate. The first is your zone of incompetence. Basically, you lack the skills and you lack the enjoyment of these skills. And so can you delegate or even eliminate those tasks as you're thinking about your leadership style, right? Mm-hmm. There's your zone of competence where you have the skills, but not particularly engaging or fulfilling. So can you delegate? Could this be a leadership opportunity for someone else? Do you actually have to do this? Or you have teams or people in your team who could benefit from doing this? And the one that we get most trapped on as leaders and high-achieving leaders is the zone of excellence. Mm-hmm. You're skilled, you're proficient, you often receive recognition, is what everyone says about you. And I think when you get caught here, it's where you try to spend the most time because it's the one that gets most rewarded. But there's another area that I think is the most powerful, is your zone of genius, which is you do like no one else. And from a personal reflection, when I'm thinking about this and as I was thinking about my own self-awareness, is like most people recognize my ability to scale organizations, to bring transformation, and I've done that, and I get rewarded for that, and I get feedback, and I thought that was the best I could do. But when I entered in reflection, I was like, no, I actually have something different, which is my ability to work with and through people. And that's the enabler of this work. Mm-hmm. And when you get that awareness, I think you just magnify your potential as a leader in an organization. And so just being able to put things into perspective, one, creates opportunities for others to learn, and two, makes you be more successful and more intentional about where you spend your time and how you scale your impact.
Amazing. So that, just to repeat for our listeners, it's called The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks.
Exactly.
Perfect. And to end, what would you share if you think about your younger self, which was just like 2, 3 years ago?
Thank you for that one.
You're welcome. My pleasure. I once sort of said something else, and then I realized that's not good. So with your younger self, Adriana, what is one piece of wisdom or advice that you would share with your younger self now?
I think it's your true self is the most powerful version of your own self. And I think I've been going through both a professional and a personal journey of finding who I am and not defined by whatever expectations of me and from a society, all of the perspectives. But understanding that what maybe you think is your weakness is actually your strength, and it's just leaning into who you really are and bringing that authenticity to everything that you do.
That's great. That's lovely. Adriana, I have lived in Europe a few times and was a Decathlon customer. And now I'm happy to
What's your
see.
favorite product? I want to put
Oh,
you on the spot.
I know. You know what? I can't, because it's been a while. I have to say, in Canada, I have not. Now I've lived in Canada for quite a while. I've not bought something in the recent. But every time I walk through Union Station, I don't know. There's a store at Union which doesn't have your full line. I mean, for sure, right? It's not your full line. But every time I kind of walk through there, and I think, oh, I need to come back, or when I'm in Montreal. So I'd like to thank you. Like, what an honor for me to speak to one of the leaders of Decathlon and to learn more about this organization. To be frank, I did not realize how mission-driven you were as an organization. That only drives me to want to be a bigger customer of yours in the future, and such that I can discover more of the wonders of sport. So on behalf of the Employee Wellbeing Council, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Welldoing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.